I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Previously on Redemption.
We have found Stacey Lockley's body.
The coroner believes she overdosed and has ruled her death as suicide.
I don't think there's much I can tell you, to be honest. I haven't seen her in 20 years. I went out of my mind looking for her. And the whole time she was right here in Dublin.
Who are you?
I'm your grandmother. What do you know about her?
She worked as a nurse in St. Peter's General Hospital.
It seems that your chief spoke to my chief and you're to join us for the next 6 months.
Did your mum ever mention me?
She said that she was glad the day you threw her out because she couldn't breathe living under your roof.
Prior to her death, Stacey was suspended from her job at the hospital due to suspected theft of opioids.
Hello, and you are very welcome along to Hooked on Redemption. I'm Gordon Hayden. Coming up on this episode, we will be hearing from the show's creator, Sean Cook, and one of the stars, Abby Fitz, who plays Cara Lockley. But first, let's remind ourselves what happened in episode 2. Confused about her latest discovery, Colette heads to the hospital where Stacey worked to speak to those who knew her, in the hopes of understanding her daughter better. As she pieces together an image of Stacey and her life, something just doesn't quite add up. At home, Colette's grandparenting skills are tested as she adjusts to living with Liam and Cara. Very shortly, I'll be speaking to Serena Bellissimo for this week's deep dive, but first, here are some of the highlights from episode 2.
I just have a few questions about my daughter. Why did you suspend her?
We discovered some prescription medication had gone missing.
Do you think Stacey could have done something extreme to make ends meet?
It's not the Stacey I knew.
What am I supposed to do?
Is someone threatening you?
How fucking dare you?
Who are you exactly?
Now on Hooked on Redemption, we are going to do a deep dive into episode 2. And there is so much to discuss. Joining me, as always, is Serena Bellissimo. Thank you so much, as always, Serena. Quite a meaty episode.
I am loving this episode. And just when I thought, Gordon, that I knew exactly where it was going, there were still some surprises thrown in there, weren't there?
Oh, absolutely. And that whole mystery quality, I love it about this show, because you're kind of looking at certain individuals going, can we really trust them? What's going on with that fella? But let's rewind the clock, because at the very beginning of the episode, Colette, she wakes up on the sofa and this bag, this mysterious bag that was left lingering at the end of episode 1 that is full of this oxycodone opiate, and there's also all these rolled up banknotes in there as well. This bag should not be in her late daughter's house, Stacey's house, and this is the drugs that have gone missing from the hospital. And there's so many questions around this, and you can see by Colette's pain to kind of go, what is it doing in Stacey's house?
Yeah, see, we don't know. Does it belong to Stacey? There's a part of us that goes, no, maybe she was minding it for someone. But then you see Colette going through some of Stacey's mail, and a lot of it, Gordon, is overdue bills. So again, once you think, okay, Stacey wasn't a part of it, then you see the overdue bills and you go, maybe she was. Maybe she actually needed to be a part of it because she couldn't afford just to keep the upkeep of the house and the kids.
And speaking of the kids, the relationship with Cara, because it's obviously been incredibly testy in the first episode. Cara, who's played by the great Abby Fitz, what an amazing actress she is. And the emotional heft that she put in to the performance in episode 1, and she continues it here in episode 2. And we'll be hearing from Abby Fitz in a few minutes on Hooked on Redemption. But Cara is not shy about letting Colette know how she feels.
Yeah, and at the beginning, there's still that frostiness between them. But, and I have to say, she was one of the characters that I just went, you're not very nice. I'm feeling empathetic for you, but I don't know if I like you. And in this episode, I went, I just want to give you a big hug. You are carrying so much. You're really sad. There's stuff going on with your boyfriend there we're not sure about. You're very defensive when it comes to your grandmother. I do love towards the end, though, even though she tries to hold up this whole, I'm going to be angry at you, Granny, for what how you treated my mum. But then she had no one to turn to one night. She calls her grandmother. Her grandmother was there. We're not saying that this relationship's going to be perfect. But even though she doesn't want it to, slowly, slowly, those barriers are starting to break down. I think we're starting to get to the bottom of who Abby really is.
Absolutely. And one of the other interesting things that does pop up in the very beginning of the episode, Paula Malcolmson's character, Colette, she spies Cara's phone and,
yeah.
And there's a text message on it from the boyfriend, Ross. And we were chatting about him last week thinking, some signpost with him. Like, I don't know if he's necessarily a good egg, this fella, but there is a message on Cara's phone. And I'm going to read it out here. And it says, stop being a bitch. Don't say anything. And you're like going, what's going on there?
And it was really interesting because there wasn't a lot of focus on the boyfriend in this episode. But when he did appear, there were a lot of questions. It was that text message. And at the very end as well, there was an interaction between her and Ross. She went to a party. He couldn't make it. He said it was because he was working. But then she was just like, I needed to let off steam. Carrying around these secrets is just too much. Gordon, what secrets? What is she carrying around?
And you know what? And this is the thing. I still can't figure out what it must be. Because then you're thinking, is there some connection to Ross and the oxycodone bag that's in the house? Was Cara, did she have some knowledge? Is that why she's even more emotional? Granted, she's lost her mother. Of course, she's going to be emotional. But is she carrying her own bag of guilt? Who knows?
Was her mother covering up something for Cara? Because what we also learned during this whole thing is, you know, when Colette is out doing her work, she still manages to talk to other people about what was happening to Stacey. And remember when they're at the hospital, we'll talk about why they're at the hospital in a second, but they're at the hospital and she excused herself and she went to talk to Stacey's boss.
Well, a wider investigation is ongoing, yeah.
So you found no evidence that she had stolen anything? Was Stacey made aware of this before her death?
No. We only recently decided to drop the part of the investigation that pertains to her.
Did it occur to you that this could be playing on her mind?
And she did find out that the hospital were about to drop the charges, that there was nothing that they could hold over Stacey, even though what they did was illegal. They suspended her without pay as well. So there was a lot going on there, but maybe it wasn't Stacey who had something to hide. Maybe it was Cara.
Also within the story, there's a couple of other story B, story C type of narratives at play as well. There is another interesting character dynamic, and that is with Sarge, who is, of course, played by Siobhan McSweeney of Derry Girls fame. Now, remember last week we were talking about her character, June Connolly. And what's quite interesting is that Colette is a very strong-willed person. You know, she's a superintendent over in Liverpool. And of course, as we know, she's had the transfer. But she gets a nice little rap on the knuckles from Siobhan's character. It's just kind of letting Colette know your place.
I just thought it was a bit harsh to throw the book at her, you know?
Tell me this, Colette. In Liverpool, when you asked one of your officers to do something, would you have expected them to do it?
Yeah. Yes, I would.
Okay. Thanks, Claire.
I thought in this episode, I started watching going, oh, I think everything's okay. Like, you know, she was asking about her personal life and stuff. But then when she went against the Sarge and did her own thing, she did sort of put her back in her place. But then, I don't know, am I overanalyzing here to think, are we going to find out in a few episodes' time that the Sarge is a bit dirty? Do you think she's got something to do with all of this?
Oh.
Because am I overreading?
I feel there's a lot of twists and turns coming here. I don't know. I actually do think the Sarge is pretty straight-laced and almost hates having to be this authority figure because it almost feels like I'm not that type, which he's not happy with Colette because she asked Colette to charge the young teenage girl from episode one, Aisling Carey, who flew the drone into Loftus Hill prison to drop in the drugs to her father. And she should have gotten charged for that. Whereas Colette felt, oh, she's a young girl. We don't want to throw the book at her.
Yeah.
But June was having none of it.
Do you know, actually talking about work for a sec, I also like, she's not getting along too well with her Sarge, but she's getting along really well with her co-worker. And I loved, what I'm starting to really enjoy is that there's a real connection happening there and a relationship forming there. It started with Tadia Graham, who plays Siobhan. Her co-worker was looking out for her at the very beginning. And this time she walked in, she was just like, she was starting to reveal a bit more about herself. We know that Siobhan is having problems with her girlfriend at home, and she's starting to open up to Colette. So I'm looking forward to seeing that relationship develop, because I almost feel like she's taking on a mother-daughter relationship there.
Oh, yeah, 100%. It's really well played between the pair of them. And then the other, probably, if we were to call it, probably the story B,
yeah,
is this horrific incident that's happened. Fiona Blake is the character's name. She's in St. Peter's Hospital, where Paula and Thaddea Graham's character, Siobhan, have gone to interview her. And it turns out that Fiona is more or less monosyllabic, really. They're not getting much information for her. There's been an incident in her house. Her son, Anthony, he has been viciously assaulted and stabbed in the abdomen and the chest. She's out of it. And what's interesting, she's out of it because she has taken lots of oxycodone.
Well, at the start, we didn't know what the, like, it was brutal enough because, you know, we found out that there was a stabbing in her house, but we didn't really know who Anthony was. Until we find out, like, it was like a gut punch when we found out that Anthony was actually her son. Was she involved in her son's stabbing? But then we find out that her boyfriend was there, and that there could have been two people involved. And then it ends so tragically with the son dying. And I think that's when it hits Fiona what is actually after happening. And I'm with you, Gordon. This is tied. I know, again, I'm like pulling at strings here, but going, is this tied to Stacey's case? Are the drugs and the money tied to that?
Oh, yeah, because there's lots of breadcrumbs have been dropped in this one. Like, you get to see one of the extreme fallouts of what can happen to individuals who overdose on this particular opiate and got out of their absolute mind. We also see that Colette on her laptop has come across a story on the Irish Capital online paper and about a pharmaceutical theft of loads of oxycodone. But again, this makes her think, this bag of oxycodone that is stashed in Stacey's house, is there a link to organized crime going on here? Because she does, good old Patrick Farron, the detective, she does kind of pry a little bit. She probes him a little bit.
Yeah.
About saying, could there be any organized crime? About, she think, what would I do? How should I go about looking into this about one of my cases? I think there might be something there. And he does give her advice on how to best handle it. But you really do think that there's a puppet master, or there is somebody at play that is very much hanging over Stacey's story.
And is that Mo Dunford's character of the boyfriend? Because again, he's not appearing in it a lot. Like, he literally has one scene. But when he appears, you're like, you know, she came home and all of a sudden he was just walking up the stairs. And she was like, sorry, who are you? What are you doing here? And she was like, he says, you know, I had the key. And he played it really well. Like, if you didn't, if she wasn't a garda detective, you'd probably buy his little story of, oh, you know, we're only together 9 months. And he seemed all really innocent and like he really cares for Stacey. But I'm sure he doesn't. I'm sure there's more to him than meets the eye.
Yeah, you could definitely think that. Or is this a complete red herring, Serena? Because another individual that we haven't seen yet that will come into play, potentially, I reckon, I'd say probably by the next episode we'll see him, is the character of Niall, who is the father of Stacey's children, who's said to be played by Ian Lloyd Anderson. Because they're talking about him
a lot.
Because, yeah, Owen and Colette, they have a chat at the breakfast table and they're over a cup of coffee and she's like, but Patrick Farron, the detective, she also, but always she's probing him for information about how long were you with Stacey? Well, you were 9 months together. Were you in love? And he's like, oh God, you're going in there. And then a little bit more information comes out and he talks about this ex and how he didn't pay child support. And this was a massive bone of contention and he wanted to see the kids and Stacey wasn't happy with him seeing the kids. So then you kind of go, hang on, could Niall be a bit of a villain type?
My kid's dad. Did he pay maintenance?
No, he did not.
I think that's why Stace was so pissed that he was demanding access to see them again.
Really? He was in contact?
Oh, yeah. Stace wasn't too happy about it either.
I think there's more to Mo Dunford's character, definitely, than meets the eye. And then, can we just go back to the very end where she walks into the house and the house has been ransacked? Ransacked!
Oh, yes. Whoever trashed that house, they were looking for something specific. And of course, we know what it is.
Yeah.
And fair play to good old Colette because she made sure it was stashed. I have to say, though, it was stashed in a place where I thought, well, they must have been horrendous burglars because I thought anyone would have found that bag where Colette stashed it.
Yeah, it was just under the couch or under a bed. Like it had like a valance over it. And I was just like, everywhere else is really messy. And you didn't think to look in the most obvious place. Thank God they were a bumbling burglar because they didn't find the cash. And the bag was there untouched, massive amounts of cash. And we get to see the drugs again. So it's going to be interesting. I think now we have all the backstories. Mm-hmm. And episode 3, it's all going to start unraveling. What do you think, Gordo?
We're definitely going to be left confused as to who the potential villain could be. Because when we get to episode 3, we're now at the halfway mark because there's six episodes in total. So I think we'll probably come away with a lot more questions. But it also might be almost like a horse race. Will two pull away from the pack and will we kind of see who the villain might be?
Oh, please tell me it's not Kara.
What do you think is going to happen?
I'm hoping that we find out more about the boyfriend because he's not as innocent as he looks. And I think things are going to bubble over for Kara. I think there's going to be real trouble ahead for her.
Oh, all shall be revealed. Serena Bellissimo, looking forward to chatting to you next week when we'll delve into episode 3 of Redemption.
Thanks, Gordon.
Did your mom ever mention me?
Sometimes, yeah.
She said you threw her out of home when she was 17.
I looked for her for years. She didn't want to be found.
So you just gave up on her?
I tried everything. She just disappeared.
Now, recently, I attended the premiere screening of episode 2 of Redemption, and I got to speak to the show's creator, Sean Cook. Here's how I got on. Sean Cook, a pleasure to talk to you, sir. Sean, I believe behind the scenes, and I really admire this about you, one of the big things that you wanted with your writing staff was to bring up-and-coming talent through, which I thought that was not only just a really good gesture, but giving someone a break. Why was that important for you?
I think it's really important to nurture up-and-coming talent. I felt like I was given a break at the sort of beginnings of my career, and I really sort of wanted to kind of pass on that gift, really. And, you know, it's really hard to break into the industry, and unless you're given a break, it's a real struggle. I certainly struggled in the beginning of my career, and it wasn't until sort of someone gave me a break, and I thought, I just need to pass that gift on.
Can I ask you about the idea for Redemption, where it came from? Because it's a very intriguing character we have here, D.I. Colette Cunningham. On one side of the coin, she is a highly respected police officer, detective, but then on the other side, her whole family life is completely upside down. Where did this whole idea come from?
I mean, I guess the answer's twofold, really. I've sort of grown up really admiring shows like Prime Suspect with kind of really strong female leads. So I really wanted to sort of create an iconic type of police character. So, you know, as far as the sort of police aspect goes, I just knew that the character was female and that she was going to be absolute kick-ass. And that, you know, she was going to be iconic in the kind of lineage of Prime Suspect and all those other sort of great female-led shows. With regard to kind of the family drama, it kind of very loosely was based on my own kind of upbringing. I kind of lost contact with my mother when I was young. I moved out of home very young. And so the kind of genesis for the idea sort of came from that. Like, what if, you know, you hadn't seen your child or your parent for 20 years? So that's where the kind of genesis of the idea came from. And I'm always really drawn to family dramas, and I just wanted to, you know, create something that was really sort of character driven and full of heart, and but with a sort of really complex character at the heart of it. You know, I just didn't want her to be. I wanted her to be struggling with personal things, because I think that's what makes really interesting characters.
And finally, tell me this. She's a Liverpudlian detective. Where did the Irish side of it come into play? Was this a remit as part of the actual project, that some of it had to be obviously based in Ireland? Or did you always have it from the very get-go that it was going to be set on both islands, essentially?
I mean, for the conceit to work, it kind of needed to be believable that Colette's daughter had gone far enough away that it would have been sort of difficult for Colette to kind of, she had to struggle to find out her whereabouts, basically. And I thought, you know, Ireland seemed like, it's an English-speaking country. It just felt like the natural kind of place, really. And, you know, sort of more believable than if she'd, I don't know, gone down to Bristol or something like that. Do you know what I mean? And then we met with Virgin Island, and we had a great meeting, and they absolutely loved the idea. So, you know, we're just really lucky that it sort of came about in that way. But yeah, like, it was all about just making sure that the kind of central conceit of her daughter having kind of disappeared for 20 years feels kind of realistic, and Ireland felt like the kind of natural home for that story to kind of evolve, really.
So. Sean, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. We wish you best of luck with Redemption, and then fingers crossed season two.
Yes, brilliant. Thank you so much.
Now, one of the stars of Redemption is Abby Fitz. She plays Cara Lockley, and Abby is just one of those actors. Her career is just going to go from strength to strength. She is an incredible talent, and it was great to catch up with her recently, talk about her character and how she got the part of Cara. Before you hear from her, here is a little bit of her from episode 2.
I don't mind driving you home, but what happened? Love, you're clearly upset. Is it something to do with that text message you got this morning?
What text? Have you been reading my messages?
Someone threatening you?
How fucking dare you?
Because if they are,
Jesus,
I need to know.
Christ. It was Ross being a dick, okay? Not that it's any of your fucking business. Just go, okay? I want to go home.
Abby Fitz, it's lovely to talk to you. Thank you so much for your time, and a massive congratulations on your performance as Cara Lockley in Redemption. It is so, so good. You are an incredible actor. You really are. And I know from being lucky enough to be at the cast and crew screening of episode 1 and 2, you could hear the sniffles. It's incredibly moving, your performance. So for those that are joining us on the podcast and would like to know a little bit more about Cara, what can you tell us?
So Cara is a 16-year-old girl who is dealing with the direct aftermath of her mother dying, which is a suspected suicide. So she is tormented by grief, pain. She's really angry. I think anger, you know, is a secondary emotion to pain. I think she's 16, doesn't know how to deal with her emotions, as most 16-year-olds. And she has this whirlwind of emotions because she's lost, you know, two of the most important people in her life, and she's lost them by their own choice. So I think she's lost faith in people. I think a lot of this anger can get projected onto Colette because it's easier to have somebody to blame rather than it just being life, and life being unfair and horrible. So I think she's lost trust. She doesn't want to let anyone in. And yeah, her emotions are definitely visceral in the series.
Can you take us back to the audition process when you first heard about Redemption, and then going for the part. Like, I don't know if they hit you straight away with some of these emotional scenes, because Cara, she is not happy with the fact that Colette Cunningham, her estranged grandmother, has arrived on the scene. Yeah. Outside of the fact that she is trying to deal with the trauma of her mother's death and just trying to figure out her life, she's in a very whirlwind relationship with a boyfriend that's quite testing as well. But there's a lot going on for this girl. So I'm just curious, when you were going for the part, what sort of sides were they giving you? Like, did they kind of hit you with the heavy stuff straight away?
Yeah, so the audition process was quite long. It was a couple of months. And it starts off, you know, usually with a self-tape. And I had a self-tape with one scene. And you kind of get a description of the character. So I knew that she was dealing with grief and that her emotions were very surface leveled and she was like fizzing with emotions. And then as it kind of went on, I ended up meeting the director. And I had two auditions with the director. And by the last audition, I think they'd sent me the first two episodes. So that was all I had in the audition process. Towards the end of the audition process, I had the first two episodes. So I had an understanding of her and the pain that she was going through. And by the end, I really had no idea. I think it came down to me and another girl. And, you know, it was definitely, I was at home with my family, like, oh my God, you know, fingers crossed. But, you know, when you get down to that last wire, you don't know. And you kind of just go, look, if it's meant, it's meant. And if not, then my time will come. But yeah, it was difficult though. And John, the director, in the audition scenes that I did with him over Zoom, they were quite long, and he definitely kind of tugged away at different emotions and trying to see much.
Because that's the thing, people will forget that this was Redemption was made at the height of the pandemic, and I know from talking to actor friends of mine that they hate the audition process because they just said, like, it's the nerves, that it's awful, it's a terrible experience.
Yeah, completely. I mean, I have been auditioning since I was four. So I've had years. I mean, I'm 21 now, so I've had years and years of it. And I mean, I'm at a point where I think that I won't be nervous. But yet, every audition I do, I'm like shaking beforehand. It's so nerve-wracking going through auditions. It really is. And over Zoom as well. There's something quite odd about being, you know, at home. I think when you can go to an in-person audition, you can kind of detached in a way, but when you're at home and, you know, your family's around, and it definitely, the nerves get exaggerated for sure.
Oh yeah, because I could well imagine, you know, you're waiting, you're in that waiting room on Zoom and you're waiting for them to be accepted in. It's like, oh, here we go.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
I heard a lovely compliment about you from Gail Munley, who we had on the podcast, your first assistant director. And She was saying to me that, you know, she was so moved by your performance. Even on set, she'd have tears in her eyes. And I don't know if this is true or not. So maybe, Abby, you can clear this up. Are you able to cry on cue?
Well, with Cara, I had spent weeks developing her to the point where she existed and she was alive, she was breathing, she was visceral. And I think her emotions, I'd gotten to a point where I knew her so well that I could tap into them. Mm-hmm. And so it had gotten to a point where, you know, that was the character and the emotions were coming. And I was very, very lucky that I'd gotten to that point. If you were to ask me today, could I cry on cue? I don't think it'd be very good. But it takes, which I suppose you don't really see on screen, the development that happens. It's weeks. It takes weeks to find a character. And crying on cue, kind of, it depends on the character, and everyone has their own process.
Mm. Yeah, because I can imagine that, you know, because it's also a really difficult thing to do, like getting yourself into that headspace, the fact that you're trying to be as immersive in the scene as possible, yet you've got, you know, grips walking around and, you know, they're messing around with the lighting, and it's like, oh, all this level of distraction, and you're trying to get into that headspace. We also had Paula Malcolmson, D.I. Colette Cunningham, on the show. And I love the whole filmmaking, television making process. And I asked her about how she likes to start a project. And she goes, I really like to, I'm paraphrasing here, but almost start as nearly as difficult as you can get. So she, going back to these emotional scenes, she said, I like actually starting with those because it kind of sets a bar. And so I don't know for you, Abby, when you're getting your call sheet and kind of, oh God, there we're going there straight away, are we? Like, do you mind me asking, like, what were those first few days like working on Redemption?
So the first scene that I did, it's in the second episode, and it was a scene where I'm a bit drunk and I'm getting in the car and I'm a bit, you know, angry. Some things had happened with my boyfriend. So it wasn't too emotionally intense, but I think it was a great balance of a kind of introduction to fiery Cara. I think for me, you know, I can always be quite shy when I first come onto set. And I think, especially as a newcomer, you know, in the industry, I quite like to have time to develop relationships with the crew and the cast. And for me, I think feeling safe, because it's very vulnerable to be in that position and to feel safe, to feel like you're around people that are supporting you and want you to do your best and encourage you. I think that for me, it was very important that I had that. And I was very lucky because the biggest scene that in the whole script, which is, you know, the first episode where I find out that my mother's died, we actually filmed that. I think it was about halfway through. So I'd already had time to develop those relationships, and I felt completely, you know, comfortable with these people. And they were all such beautiful people and lovely that it was, yeah, I felt really safe.
You mentioned there about being new and I have to say, like, it already we've got The Cellar out. Double Blind is another upcoming film that we're going to look forward to seeing you hopefully about a year's time, because I know you're just about, you're in pre-production with it at the moment. But back to All Things Redemption, though, coming away from the shoot and the experience of working with these incredibly talented actors and the amazing crew as well, as an actor, what did you learn on this project that you took away and think, oh, I'll be carrying this with me now into, say, Double Blind?
Yeah. Well, I was really, really lucky to get Redemption, to work with such professional cast and crew. And I think the core of everything that I learned is, you know, I had time to develop a knowledge of what it is to be on a film set. And it really is a collaboration. You know, everyone is doing a job. And when you treat, you know, because I really saw with like Paul and Ian and Mo, you know, when you treat people with respect and, you know, encouragement, and we're all in this together, there's like a buzz and everyone's excited because we're producing something, and it's, you know, it's a collaboration. And I really saw that, and just the professionalism, you know, be on time, if not early, always, you know, the script never really ends. As you know, you can finish a day's work, but you go home and you look over your lines for the next day. You know, just that complete professionalism. I saw it, and I think that has definitely set the bar of how I want to be in this career, and how I want to, you know, how you should be, really. Which I think I learned so much just by being around people with that attitude. And as well, it's, you know, when people have that attitude, they produce good work. And watching Redemption, you know, the quality of it is it's so good that you see that it did pay off.
It's an incredible piece of work all round. I think as well, John Hayes, props to him, you know, great direction there as a director. And, you know, there you are, the pair of you first meeting on Zoom, going through the audition process. There he is then in front of you while you're on set. In terms of directing, like, what's he like? You know, is he giving you like small little notes just about how to handle a certain scene, maybe little tweaks and changes? Because I know, again, from talking to other actors, some actors don't like lots of director notes. Do you know what I mean? It's a real case. Oh, no, I can get this. Or what for you, again, going back to process as well, how do you like to be directed, essentially, Abby?
I really think that John is an actor's director. And, you know, when I was doing, you know, emotional scenes, and we'd have long discussions about Cara, and he didn't, you know, he wanted it to be, obviously, you know, I know the character, and it's, you know, it is a collaboration. But at the end of the day, he encouraged me and Evan to you know, bring our opinions to this, which was nice, because, you know, in some ways we're the younger people, you know, sometimes that can, being younger, you can kind of feel like your opinion, you're just listening to everyone else. But he really encouraged us to speak our voice. And I felt really like when I was doing the big scenes, he really was there with me, and he wanted me, you know, he respected, you know, take your time. There was a complete level of understanding, you know, this is you and we'll accommodate you in this scene. And I really did appreciate that.
I have to be honest with you, Abby, the performance as Kara in Redemption is just incredible. Like, for what you have to do in the first episode alone, and then even in episode two as well, like, you know, the emotional aspect that you bring to the screen. I mean, it is such a great performance. I'm so excited to see everything that is in your future as well. I think you are such a talent. Abby Fitz, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And that's it for this week's podcast. Hooked on Redemption was presented and produced by me, Gordon Hayden. Special thanks to Metropolitan Films, Tall Story Pictures and Virgin Media Television. We'll be back next week for a deep dive into episode 3. From all of us here, we'll chat to you on the next Hooked on Redemption.
There's nothing to investigate unless you have evidence.
I'm trying to get to the truth.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.